The Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been helping America's heroes and their families since 9/11. Hero first responders and service members who serve our communities and our country. Those who die in the line of duty or are catastrophically injured. Veterans who fought for our nation's freedom only to return home, fall in tough times, and become homeless. Heroes like Buffalo, New York firefighter Jason Arno and his family. Arno was killed while protecting his community, battling a warehouse fire. He left behind his wife and a young daughter. In their darkest hour, Tunnel to Towers provided Arno's wife and daughter with a mortgage-free home. The foundation lifted a financial burden, enabling them to stay in the home where they made memories with their hero. Join Tunnel to Towers on its mission to do good. Support the families of America's greatest heroes, the families of fallen first responders like Jason Arno, plus Gold Star families with young children, catastrophically injured service members, and homeless veterans. Donate $11 a month at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org. Welcome to the Buck Sexton Show, everybody. With me now, my friend David Reboy. He is a fellow at the Claremont Institute. He also has a great Substack, Late Republic Nonsense, which you can all subscribe to. And if you want to know how to get gains in the gym, he's also an expert on that one. For those of you who are only listening and not seeing, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see exactly why. But Mr. Reboy, honored to have you on the program, sir. What is it? Tell me about Late Republic Nonsense. That's an interesting title for a Substack. Are we the Late Republic, and what kind of nonsense is going on?
We are indeed the Late Republic. Thanks for having me on. It was a name that came to me because nothing else seemed even remotely as appropriate. I thought for years that we're in the kind of late republic period, and you know, when I started saying it, people thought I was crazy, but at this point I don't think there will be all that much pushback. And the nonsense part is, like, these are the things that that happen when you start when it seems like the form of government and the things that we used to take for granted, really, about our union and about comedy and civility and the things that we all thought we agreed on, or maybe haven't in quite a long time. I mean, at some point it's going to reach its it's going to reach the end. And I think that talking about it and talking about why these problems are maybe seem insurmountable is the only way that we can really face them and do something about it.
How did we get to this point? What happened? Because I do often talk to friends of mine, my peers, about how it didn't seem like, maybe everyone has nostalgia for the era of their youth, but it felt like in the 90s we were arguing over things, but we were arguing over things from roughly the same side of the world viewpoint. I can't really explain it better than, you know, it felt like we used to be arguing more over, you know, the tax code and things that didn't necessarily go to the heart of the republic itself, and maybe undermine it, maybe kick at the load-bearing walls of civilization. What happened?
Right. Well, I mean, that's a question that has about a million different possible answers, going back as far as you know, you'd like to go back. There are people who say that it the problem is ingrained in liberalism and the Enlightenment itself. You know, there's a propensity for this stuff, let's say this openness, to self-destruct given enough time and in, you know, the passage of enough generations. I mean, I think trying to figure out where the problem started is almost pointless, because we're not going to rewind and we're not going to go back, and there's no time machine to go back and to necessarily fix it. But what we're dealing with is the fact that we have two completely different conceptions of justice. I mean, that's the basis, is that we understand justice differently between left and right. And that kind of has its expression in every possible conceivable issue. And
Of justice, and how do they conceive of justice, David?
Well, I mean, they conceive of justice as group justice. And we see it as a kind of individual thing. You know, if you or I did something, then you or I did something. We believe in the fact that justice is blind, and you're judged on the things that you do, not necessarily on the things that you are, which is how, which is the other view of justice that, that the left has, which is, you know, we call it collectivist, but you can call it anything you want. I mean, at the end of the day, it really matters to them if a perpetrator is black or if he's white or if he's this or if he's that. You know, that is the thing that define, you know, the characteristics is the thing that defines, you know, the way justice necessarily is served. And that translates too to politics. You know, I mean, you see, like, you know, you've got juries that in Washington, D.C. or in Chicago or in New York City that would convict a Republican, you know, that would put a Republican to death for jaywalking, because it's such a kind of us versus them, you know, conception when it comes to justice. And that's something that's really significant. You know, that's not just something that you paper over. And here we are.
When you talk about collectivists, their collective sense of justice, why does somebody want to be a collectivist? Or where does this come from? Is it rooted in a sense of one's own insufficiency, weakness, and the paranoia that comes from that, and therefore the desire to achieve stability and even power through attachment to a group identity instead of an individual identity? Like, why? It just seems to me like, why would anyone want to be a collectivist?
Yeah, I mean, Thomas Sowell has written about this in kind of a very beautiful, persuasive way in I think it's The Quest for Cosmic Justice, where he basically splits up human nature into two different types of, where he splits people into two different types of, you know, the way they deal with human nature. You know, one is fixed and one is non-fixed. So we who are on the right, we say human nature is fixed. You know, people are going to be people from one civilization to the next. They're going to prioritize different things, but they're going to be essentially people. They're going to be motivated by the things that always motivate people, you know, whether it's, you know, religion or honor, the fact that, you know, we have a love of one's own, which goes back, you know, to the beginning of time. The unfixed position, on the other hand, which is, you know, commonly we think of as left, they say, no, you know, it's actually humanity is a blank slate, which comes from Rousseau. And we think that, hey, we can socialize people out of all of these horrible, bigoted, terrible ideas by getting them to, you know, by doing whatever, and, you know, raising them differently, educating them differently, you know. And you see this every day. You know, you see the left going crazy, for example, in Florida, where they can no longer necessarily have access to kids, to talk to kids about, you know, about sexual issues. They're going crazy because they know that that's their whole game.
Yeah. Well, what is that? I mean, the ferocity with which the institutional left and the activists of the progressives, and these are just all different words for Democrats, right? These are all different flavors of right. Democrat. But the anger with which they approach the issue of stopping clearly inappropriate and pornographic books from being assigned or handed to grade school children, or even this decision or this idea that somehow allowing a, you know, 40-year-old man with a hairy chest to put on a wig, a bunch of makeup, fishnet stockings, and shake his butt in front of a room full of, in many cases, parents with their children, which is also a whole other component. When you say this is bad, they don't try to persuade you, right, David? They don't say, no, this is a good thing, because they become ferociously angry, right. Almost like a demonic rage surges. What's that coming from?
In a way, they have to be, because I'm forgetting who said it, but somebody made an observation years ago that was excellent, which is that since the civil rights struggle in America, or let's say since the left was victorious in the civil rights struggle in America, everything became a civil rights struggle. And so now every issue is framed in terms of, self-expression and liberties and we talk about the next frontier of groups that are, that are marginalized, that are finally coming out of the shadows and getting full and equal, rights. And now we've gotten to the point where we're talking about pedophiles coming out of the shadows. We're talking about all kinds of weird, deviant, kind of crazy sexual stuff. I think they get angry because at the end of the day, they kind of have to be. There's a part of them that is human that says this is totally wrong. And they're trying to convince themselves with their furiosity that they're on the side of the good and the good and the wholesome and sort of on the side of the angels and of liberty,
righteousness.
You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Righteousness. And, yeah. And so that's part of it. I mean, the other thing is that a lot of people have been shocked at how comprehensively the left has folded on the issue, for example, of minor children being gender transitioned.
I always say about this, David, not to interrupt you, but there is no such thing as a gender transition. I have to remind everyone. I know that's the terminology we're all supposed to use. There is no gender transition. There is gender destruction. You can destroy your genitalia. You can destroy your ability to have a normal, endocrine function and reproductive system. Sure, you can destroy it. You cannot change it, though. That doesn't actually work.
Right. But they will argue that there is biology and then there is sort of the ineffable way you feel about your gender, which is your gender identity. And your gender identity has absolutely nothing to do with biological reality. And to say that it does is, some kind of terrible, horrible thing.
Isn't it amazing how the argument is completely incoherent, because they say that gender reality has nothing to do with your sexual reality. Well, then why do we have to match the sexual reality of children to their gender identity? Right? The connection, they disassociate it. So they can create these additional categories, but then they also insist that there is a connection that has to be changed, right? Why not? If we're just letting people be who they are and it's about psychological affirmation, then why do you have to do the physical stuff? And the other part of it, I always talk to people about it with this stuff too, is no one actually thinks that these are women. Everybody who goes along with this, and we're talking generally here about men, biological men or boys who try to transition to female, they're not fooling anybody. And even if they're able to fool some people in some situations, from a distance or with makeup or with AI or whatever, eventually it becomes clear this is not actually a woman. So why do we go through this? But there's really something deeply corrupt in the soul of the left and the Democrat Party these days that I think this really exposes. David, I want to come back to this in a second. I actually want to ask you, speaking of party politics, I know you're very... you have a lot of ideas about the 2024 election and where things should be and where things are right now. So I want to get into this. But first, come out this Tuesday, May 23rd in the morning. Please join me online for an exclusive interview with an extraordinary market analyst, my dad, Mason Sexton. That's right. My dad's going to be talking about the great disruption of 2023. Dad's a Harvard Business School grad, and he translated 50 years of Wall Street experience into this presentation that you are going to be able to see on Tuesday. Dad called the 1987 stock market crash on TV and then went on to make other incredibly accurate and timely market calls. New York Post back in the day said he makes uncanny predictions of market turns. The Economist said he could be the next market guru. He called the 1987 market crash practically down to the minute, said the Chicago Tribune. Now Mason's coming forward with his first major prediction in 30 years. Dad has something big to say, and he says it's going to be set in motion over the next 8 weeks. If you want the details, you just have to go to disruption2023.com. That's disruption2023.com. All right, David, what do we have to know about how things are looking for the GOP in this now beginning of the 2024 election cycle?
Well, it's, the basics are unchanged really for the last several months, which is that it's a race between Donald Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. It's no secret that I support the governor. I was a big Trump supporter for four years during his term. And in 2019, after I moved to Florida, I was shocked and very impressed with the way my governor, Ron DeSantis, was handling not only COVID, but other issues that were important to the right as well. And I think he's a once in a generation or more leader, because at the end of the day, I talk about this thing. I say, you have to know what time it is. And that's kind of shorthand for understanding the moment that we're in, understanding that the fight necessarily cannot be won by simply being a Republican of yesteryear. I think the most important characteristic that we need to find, let's say those of us on the right need to find in a leader, is someone who's willing to aggressively and competently use state power against some of the institutions on the left, and to try to rebalance the power relationships and to protect the American citizens. DeSantis is the only guy out there, frankly, that recognizes that the threats are not only coming from the government; they're coming from large corporations, they're coming from academia, they're coming from, you know, from big tech, they're coming from medical boards. They're coming from all of these, let's say, non-governmental associations that nevertheless are wielding tremendous ideological power over us. And that balance needs to be reshifted, or else we all lose. I mean, what's the point here if Amazon can force us, or, you know, another big company can force us to feel a certain way about politics, you know, and take on the left's view? You know, I mean, who cares who's sitting in the Oval Office?
Hi, I'm Michael Rappaport.
And I'm Kibi Rappaport.
And together we're hosting Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
We have a passion for reality TV, and we're inviting you into our living room.
We're talking tea, we're dissecting the drama, and we're giving praise to the single greatest form of entertainment on television today. That is right. Reality TV is the greatest form of entertainment on television today.
Here are some examples of what you'll hear from us on Rappaport's Reality Podcast.
This is where we discuss all things reality TV, all things popular culture.
And a little bit of Rappaport's reality, the reality of us.
We're figuring out. And if we had been recording these last 4 or 5 days, it would have been,
juicy.
The podcast would have taken a left turn.
Listen to Rappaport's Reality with me, Kibi Rappaport.
And me, Michael Rappaport, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
David, just a quick note. I think your cord is touching your mic a little bit, because we're getting some interference. So just watch your watch your ear cord with that a little bit, or it might just be the connection, but just watch the cord there. The reality of institutions, platforms, and leveraging power. I've been shouting to everybody who will listen that the idea of the neutral space, that the right had been obsessed with the conservatism that I became familiar with in high school, college, and afterwards, that we want a marketplace of ideas, but there are also areas where we want things to be non-political. I think the right has woken up to a reality, and it's not just now. It's been about the last 6 or 7 years in the making, that if the other side thinks that they don't have to respect this so-called neutral space because they can run the table on you, that's what they're going to do, right? So you have to have enough power to say, hey, are we gonna be fair and neutral in this area or not? And if you're not, we can do something about it. If you're just appealing to the left's sense of fair play, they'll just stomp your face in the mud and laugh at you. And I think the conservatives have finally gotten the memo on that a little bit.
I think
maybe
I think we have out in, you know, out in the public, but we have not had a champion like Ron DeSantis, who is sitting in power and actually has the ability to do something about these things. I mean, it's one thing for us to say, you know, yes, we need to fight back against these institutions. But it's another thing to have someone who also understands this and has the power to do so and the inclination and frankly, the fearlessness with which to do it. He understands that value neutrality is nonsense in this day and age. You know, you can have, which is, you know, exactly kind of going to your point. There's that space in society that we kind of assumed was, you know, let's say empty of political content. But now the left has filled that space with political content. There's nowhere you can go from advertising to anywhere else where it's where like these leftist ideology has not kind of seeped in. And this is moral propaganda from every possible avenue. And at the end of the day, it needs to be stopped. And Governor DeSantis understands that, and he's willing to fight it. Not only that, I mean, what he did, for example, with the new college up in Sarasota.
Can I pause you with the college in Sarasota? I want to come back to it in a second, because this is the wielding of institutional power, the understanding of how to shift and shape institutions like universities and colleges. DeSantis, I think, is somebody who, well, David Reboy is going to tell us in a second just how he was able to do that. And maybe that's a model for a lot of other places. But you need to have the right biochemistry to feel good day in and day out. And a lot of us, as we get older, we have testosterone levels, especially, you get up into your later years, 40s, 50s, testosterone levels start to decline pretty rapidly. That's why the Patriots at Chalk spend years formulating their daily supplements. All natural ingredients, and the leading ingredient in Chalk's Male Vitality Stack has been proven to replenish 20% of deficient amounts of testosterone in 3 months' time. The Biden campaign would benefit from, I'm sure, getting a little extra testosterone, but they're not going to check it out because they don't trust me. Everything Chalk makes is lab tested twice for purity to ensure the potency is there. If you're looking for more energy in your day, more focus, Chalk's Male Vitality Stack is the answer. Find it online at chalk.com. That's chok.com. Get 35% off the Chalk subscription of your choice for life when you use my name, Buck, in your purchase process. That's chalk, chok.com. 35% off when you use promo code Buck, which is my name. All right, David, what happened in Sarasota? What did Governor DeSantis do to the university there or the college there?
So there is a university there. There was a small liberal arts school that the state was paying for. And rather than close it, you know, you had kind of, let's say the old Republican point of view was, hey, this stuff costs money and, you know, maybe there are leftists there. Let's just close it down and walk away. But DeSantis was a lot smarter than that. He realized that, hey, why can't we use it for our purposes? And it sounds like such a little thing, but it's actually a revolution in terms of the way the right sees itself, the way the right sees its ability to exert power. And really, it's the way the right sees itself as being legitimate. And DeSantis said, as a matter of fact, no, we're going to keep it open, but we're going to make sure that it becomes, it stops teaching leftist insane dogma and goes and becomes, let's say, the premier state-run school for liberal arts and true education in kind of the old way, as opposed to nonstop leftist propaganda. And he went and he replaced, the director or whoever, I mean, on the staff that put up some resistance to this. And now he's getting teachers who are coming in from all over the country and kind of wanting to do something like Hillsdale College in Florida. And this is going to be a thriving, wonderful school at some point when it really gets off the ground and they start doing this. And of course, the left is going completely bonkers about this because they that, you know, DeSantis knows, and they know that DeSantis knows how important not just academia is to them, but the fact that for up until now, nobody's even been on the field when it comes to this stuff. So they're going crazy. They're freaking out because one school is not hard left. And we kind of, we need more of that. And that's just, I mean, that's one, you know, little tiny example. Disney is the big one that everyone talks about, but there are really a lot. And I think here in Florida, he has redefined what it means to have conservative governance. And he has done things, he's passed laws, you know, I mean, in this session alone, that folks on the right have been wanting for, you know, for ages. We didn't even, we wrote them off as if we would never get them. And what that does is it attracts more people on who are on the right to move to Florida, number one. Number two is it's created such a kind of thrilling happiness. It's very hard to describe if you don't live here. And you know, everyone that you run into is kind of is happy to be here. Couldn't be more happy, and couldn't be more happy with the governor. Of course, there are some, you know, discontents, but you have that malcontents, but you have that everywhere. Hopefully the campaign, kind of getting back to that, hopefully the campaign will show everybody Florida and will show that you know, that the Republicans all around the country want a piece of this, and I think they do.
I ask you in a second, David, just about the, I feel like there's a, I don't know if you'd call it a war on aesthetics, beauty, and aspiration in this country, but if you've seen recently, it's not just recent, I mean, it's been going on for years now, all this stuff about whether it's fat shaming, or now Adidas has guys with hairy chests wearing women's bathing suits to try to sell, like, just, it feels like something weird is happening where, as a society, we're no longer allowed to have anything that is aspirational, beautiful, and, you know, it's everything is being torn down. I just kind of, I wanted your sense of that philosophically. But first off, for everyone at home, I want to make sure they don't lose their really important documents, photos, and other things. Here's how it happens. Your computer crashes, something gets stolen. If you're like me, you're working on a book, or you've got really important stuff on your laptop. What happens when it's all taken from you? Well, my friends, you have to get yourself an iDrive. iDrive is the backup of all backups. iDrive lets you back up your PCs, Mac servers, mobile devices, all of it into one account for one cost. Not to mention, iDrive is a PC Mag winner 8 years in a row, the best cloud backup solution for everyone, consumers and businesses. iDrive is the easiest, most secure cloud backup solution. Plans start at less than $7 a month. Get 90% off the first year when you use my name, Buck, as the promo code at checkout. 90% off your first year, and you get peace of mind with iDrive.com. Make sure you use my name, Buck. You'll get 90% off that first year with iDrive.com. Something you need to have. And if you don't, you're going to really regret it. So just get it set up today. iDrive.com, promo code Buck. All right, David, you know what I mean? The war on aesthetics. The elevation of the ugly, the unhealthy, and the grotesque in our society, in our culture. What's that all about?
Well, it's about dispiriting us, you know, at the end of the day. And I don't necessarily think that this is an organized effort, that there's somebody in the back in a control room saying, you know what, let's give these people terribly ugly things. But I think there has been a long war on beauty, kind of traditionally understood, and it's very, let's say, it's very easy to hop on board that bandwagon and go for the destruction of beauty. You know, when you are yourself not beautiful or you know, terribly ugly. I mean, it's a horrible thing to say, but I don't think. You know, I think we've all noticed how Antifa looks when they are arrested. I think we all have an idea of the types of, you know, the way the folks look who show up on libs of TikTok videos. And, you know, then these folks are not happy. So the question is, do they try to destroy beauty because they are not happy? Or are they not happy because they are not beautiful and they want to destroy beauty? I mean, it's kind of chicken and an egg thing. But I think you're right to notice that it's absolutely going on. We see it kind of in every place. I mean, from music to cinema to art to everything that is all around us. I mean, even the way you see colors, put together in ads or things like that. It's not the way things, it's kind of meant to unsettle in a way. And the kind of weird bio-Leninist, psychosexual gender thing, feeds into that. And, I think most people who are normal kind of, turn around and they look at this and they think this is awful weird. One of the nice things is I have a nephew who's 15, and he is kind of thankfully immune to a lot of the woke stuff. And he tells me about his experiences in high school surrounded by this insanity, and his parents are not very political. And so he kind of came to realize that these things were insane on his own, which gives me a lot of hope. Here's a young kid who just looks around and said, these people are obviously insane. And I said to him, why do you think that you kind of had the antibodies to fight off this disease? And he's like, oh, it's simple, because I play football. Because, for a couple hours every day, I put the phone down and I do something real and I do something physical. And, and I can't talk my way out of it. I can't not show up. It's the same thing with the gym. I mean, it's, folks who lift are almost always right wing. Why? Because, you can't talk your way out of it. Either you did the thing or you didn't do the thing. And that world of the real is really important. It's really important to maintain, because what a lot of people want, and the way things are going, if you look at, you look at AI, you look at social media, I think a lot of folks out there are desirous of a world that exists, electronically, and that's it. We're no longer interacting in the real world. We're just, we're sending messages to one another. We're no longer talking on the phone. Instead, we're just texting each other all day.
The Matrix is feeling very real these days for a lot of people.
So the most important thing now is to have at least one or two or maybe more real things that you have in your life that that connect you with reality.
I was going to ask you for a point of optimism to close on, David, but we can leave it with that one, which is that doing real stuff and operating in the real world and setting aside time in your day every day to think about, whether it's at the gym or just, reading good and real books and going for walks outside in the sunshine or in the snow or wherever you are, that can affect the way you view the world, and also puts the, as you put it, the antibodies in place to fight against the woke mind virus that is out there. David Reboy, everybody, go check out his Substack, Late Republic Nonsense. David, my friend, always appreciate you hanging out. Thanks so much.
It's my pleasure. See you soon.
Since 9/11, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has been committed to improving the lives of America's veterans, first responders, and their families. For over 20 years, the foundation has helped America keep its solemn promise to never forget. Tunnel to Towers provides mortgage-free homes to Gold Star families and the families of fallen first responders with young children, and build specially adapted smart homes for catastrophically injured veterans, as well as work to eradicate veteran homelessness. David Marshall served in the Army during World War II and fought in the Battle of the Bulge. He's never forgotten the sacrifices of his comrades in arms, nor the efforts of first responders on 9/11 and in the days and months that followed. He is a loyal and proud foundation donor. Tunnel to Towers is committed to supporting veterans, first responders, and their families, and so many of them need your help. Join the foundation on its mission to do good and never forget. Donate $11 a month to Tunnel to Towers at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.